I'm going to call the House Committee on Transportation to order. Welcome, everybody. I think we have an overview today of the DMV office, so we'll go ahead and get started, and maybe there'll be plenty of time for you guys to catch up on email or whatever it is that you... Welcome.
Thank you. Representative Biden, for the record, my name is Tom McClellan, DMV Administrator with the Department of Transportation, and I am here to give an overview of our division as a member, as a part of the Department of Transportation. You should have written materials in front of you, and I'll just quickly go through what's laid out here and then see what questions that you do have. Just as an introduction, we like to consider ourselves the face of state government. In many ways, we touch just about every Oregonian in one way or another throughout their lifetime. And our mission is really around that, serving the public. We focus on providing driver licenses and ID cards, titling and registering of vehicles, and the regulation of the sale of vehicles. We are the face of state government for most Oregonians. When they first come to Oregon, they're registering their vehicle, titling their vehicle, they're getting a driver's license. If they're changing their address, they're notifying us, they're renewing their licenses. It's a lot of contact with Oregonians, and we do take that very seriously. Our mission is to promote driver safety, to protect financial and ownership interests in vehicles, and to collect revenue for Oregon's highways. DMV is committed to offering responsive and convenient services and to build public trust, and we say one customer at a time. It really is each person, each day, making sure that they're served properly. We collect vehicle and driver fees for the Oregon Highway Fund, dedicated to road construction, maintenance, and modernization of state by the state constitution. About 40% of our funds are distributed to Oregon counties and cities. This biennium, it's estimated, will bring in about $500 million in highway fund revenues. That's net of our costs to operate. We are organized, and I don't think you care quite, too much about how we're organized, but I just thought I'd share this with you. We're focused around two main program areas, driver and vehicle programs, and then our other service groups are really around organized around the delivery of services, the modes, the channels that we deliver services. So the first group is program services. This group is responsible for coordinating the major changes that we put in place each biennium around programs and operational changes, largely from legislative change. They provide policy direction, business process improvement. They are very active in our computer system initiatives. They develop and implement policies and procedures, administrative rules. A lot of the administrative aspects of a state agency this group is responsible for. On page two, I'll get into driver programs there a little bit. There are about 3.2 million Oregonians who hold some level of driving privileges today. We issue about 760,000 driver license and ID cards each year, including the renewals and the replacements. DMV licenses drivers by providing information about safe driving practices and behaviors, the rules of the road. We print driver manuals and other publications. We verify that people meet the identity requirements and eligibility requirements to be a driver. We promote driver safety by ensuring drive tests meet or exceed national standards and by re-examining drivers and by suspending or revoking driving privileges for drivers who no longer meet the standards who have committed driving offenses. We provide testing, instruction permits, and licensing for commercial drivers. We provide endorsements for additional commercial driving privileges and motorcycle endorsements. We issue identification cards to individuals who meet state identity and residency requirements. Our programs target three major components of safe driving behavior. It's the experience level, compliance with rules of the road, and physical and cognitive capability to operate a vehicle. The experience side, as you probably know, we have teen driver, provisional driver laws in the state. First 6 months of driving is the most dangerous time behind the wheel. Our graduated driver licensing program restricts privileges to those drivers younger than 18 years during the first months they hold a license. The program imposes stricter standards for teens than for adults, and I think for obvious reasons, I hope. Compliance, in addition to court-ordered suspensions, DMV has administrative authority to restrict or suspend driving privileges for those drivers who've committed driving offenses over a two-year period. We have a driver improvement program. We can revoke driving privileges for those who have large numbers of traffic violations or convictions for traffic crimes. DMV imposes automatic suspensions for drivers who fail to appear for a traffic ticket or fail to comply with court-imposed requirements for a driving conviction. On the capability side, we can suspend for require retesting of drivers under the Oregon Medically At-Risk Driver Program. There's both a mandatory and a voluntary component to that program. Oregon law requires physicians to report to DMV any physical or mental impairment that affects a driver's ability to drive safely and cannot be corrected through treatment or vehicle equipment. Depending on the severity of the impairment, we may take immediate action to suspend the driver's license or may require the driver to retest to determine their ability to operate a vehicle safely. Although a large portion of the drivers who are in this program are 7 years or older, we do have drivers of just about any age that are part of this program because it is impairment-based, not age-based. DMV maintains a driver record for everyone licensed in Oregon, but also those individuals who are unlicensed or residents of other states who receive traffic convictions in Oregon. We create a record for those individuals in our system. Each year, we enter about 510,000 traffic convictions onto the driving record, and we issue approximately 450,000 suspensions, revocations, and cancellations involving about 250,000 individuals. Those statistics stay pretty stable year after year. It's about 450,000 that we enter, affecting about 250,000 people. Doesn't seem to vary a whole lot over time.
Do you find that the 250,000 individuals varies very much?
Madam Chair, it doesn't much. And as you can see, most people are getting one conviction or suspension or withdrawal action, and that's all that they're receiving. But then there are a lot of other people who are receiving multiple ones. But on average, I guess, each year, it's about 250,000 people that are receiving these. Right? We're adding those to their records. Doesn't vary much. Oregon law requires that registered vehicles be insured to minimum state standards. We have an automated insurance reporting system. The insurance companies in the state report their book of business to us so that we know who is insured by their records. That system is then used to contact vehicle owners who may not have liability insurance on record. It's also accessible by law enforcement to check for the insurance status of registered vehicles as an indicator that driver may not be operating an insured vehicle. We suspend the licenses of the drivers who do not carry liability insurance on vehicles that they're driving. So in a nutshell, that's our driver's program. On the vehicle side, any questions?
I'm not seeing what I was curious about this one. How quickly does the insurance turn around? If the person's, cancels or gets canceled on their insurance, how quickly will you know that?
Madam Chair, it's every 30 days we must be notified by the insurance company. We don't automatically contact drivers if it appears that the insurance has dropped. And I'll get into this a little bit more, but we randomly sample drivers that may not have insurance over a period of time. But the insurance companies give us an update every 30 days. Okay. So the person may be insured 1 month, and the next month they may have canceled their insurance. They'll show up as an uninsured driver.
Okay. Representative Widener.
Just to follow up on that, I'm going to have a bunch of questions here that I'm going through, but since we're on insurance, how about the individuals that go out and will buy a year bond on their insurance and then they cancel it like a month afterwards? Because even if you're notified of it, I know the police have an issue with this because they see the bond card there and think that they're insured when they're really not. And it sounds like that's been a problem that they've been dealing with on law enforcement.
Madam Chair, Representative Widener, I'd have to do some checking on the bond side of things to see what we do. If we're notified by the bond company that it's been canceled, I don't know if we take action at that point to contact the driver. There are very few, actually, that are bonded. It's much more common to have the insurance, you know, coverage through the standard insurance, you know, companies.
Well, this sounds like, sounds like it's something that's starting to occur in the system.
Okay.
So I've had several law enforcement officers approach me about this. So.
Okay. I will follow up on that then.
Okay. I don't see anything else right now, so go ahead.
Okay. In our vehicle program, we title vehicles to protect ownership rights, and we provide license plates and registrations for vehicles to make sure they're easily identified and on the road and to raise revenues for the Oregon Highway Fund. DMV issues vehicle titles that provide the proof of ownership to protect financial interests and to record security interest holders on those titles. We inspect the vehicle identification numbers for vehicles that are new to Oregon. We examine the title and ownership documents. Prior to issuing a title, we check for information on stolen vehicles through state and national law enforcement data systems. We issued about 932,000 titles in 2008. Right now, there are just over 4 million registered vehicles in Oregon, and we conducted about 1.8 million registration transactions last year, including both new and renewals. We also help ensure that vehicles are meeting air quality emission standards in the Portland and Medford areas. As certified by the Department of Environmental Quality. The vehicles in these areas must pass the EQ emissions test before DMV can renew registrations. And registration renewals are conducted through the Internet, over in the mail, DMV field offices, and by DEQ personnel at the air quality emissions testing stations. About 25% of the vehicle registration renewals are done at DEQ emissions stations in the state right now. In addition to the standard registration plates, DMV issues Salmon, Crater Lake, and Cultural Trust specialty plates. They carry a surcharge to support the programs, these programs of public interest. In statute, it's limited to 3 specialty plates. We also issue custom plates subject to configuration approval and group plates for purposes such as veteran recognition, university affiliation, bicycle safety. There are several different types of group plates. DMV and vehicle dealerships issue temporary registration permits and trip permits to allow the temporary operation of vehicles on Oregon roads and highways, and registration while registration is pending. DMV also implemented a privatization initiative several years ago, started in December of 2002, that allows the dealers to initiate the vehicle registration and title transaction. They collect the fees and they issue plates and registration there at the dealership. There's about 120 vehicle dealerships participating in the program. There's ebbs and flows. We're in a ebbing, I guess, that's where the economy is right now. Fewer dealerships and fewer involved in this program. They average about 35 transactions per month. DMV also licenses and regulates vehicle and driver-related businesses in Oregon. There's about 3,500 of those right now. Those include the new and used car dealers, wreckers, vehicle appraisers, transporters, driving instructors, commercial driver training schools. These businesses are regulated to ensure that titles are transferred correctly, security interests are recorded, and other operating standards are met. So it's recording type, record-keeping type things that we're looking for. We also have commercial drive schools and instructors who are regulated to protect public safety. Our investigators conduct routine inspections and they respond to complaints from consumers. We work very closely with the Department of Justice Consumer Protection Division. If a problem is found, we issue warnings. We can impose civil penalties. We can suspend or revoke the business licenses. And we conducted about 1,100 of those inspections last year. Our field services includes the 64 offices we have across the state. Last year, we served about 9,000 people. It was actually down a bit from previous years. The field offices administer driver knowledge, skill, and vision tests. We issue the driver licenses, driver permits, and identification cards. We will reinstate driving privileges, register vehicles, issue plates and stickers, a wide range of services that we provide. We conducted about 215,000 driver knowledge tests for individuals and 80,000 drive tests for the passenger, non-commercial applicants. Field offices also do work for other ODOT divisions.
Madam Chair.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Thank you. Tom, I wonder if you can characterize for us the impact of the proof of legal residence requirement on traffic volumes in the field offices.
Madam Chair, Representative Edwards, we have seen a decrease in identification cards issued and numbers of driver licenses applied for since February of 2008 when the governor's executive order took effect. We've seen a significant drop in the number of knowledge tests that we administer, especially in foreign languages such as Spanish, another indicator of the effect of that executive order, and that's continued to stay down since the bill from February of 2008 passed. So that's, we have seen a reduction. How much of that is economic related and how much was law change, it's really hard to determine, mm-hmm. but we have seen a decrease.
Thank you.
Thank you. Madam Representative, I don't know who is first.
Go ahead.
Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Schaffler. Thank you, Madam Chair.
My pleasure.
Actually, Representative Edwards hit on one of the questions I was going to have, because the Oregonian posted that it was basically went from 4,748 to 434. It was the reduction, and I'm just wondering if there's any action or anything going forward to find out some of the illegals that we were given driver's licenses to, or if there's any way we could investigate that. And it should see your wait times have probably went from 15 minutes to, my friends are telling me, 2 minutes rather than 20 minutes when they walk into the DMV. But I just wonder if there's anything, any action we're looking at taking on finding all the false identities that we do have out there.
Madam Chair, Representative Widener, the time for checking that now is on a replacement or a renewal transaction for a driver license or an ID card. We are not calling people back in for retesting or revalidating their identity. So if a person loses their card, they're coming back in and they're being subjected to more stringent requirements. We're verifying immigration documents that are presented to us as of January 1 of this year. So the tighter standards are in place, but we're not going back. We have really no way of really going back and asking people to come back and re-verify their identity or their legal status in the United States.
Follow-up.
Just a quick follow-up. So I was going through looking at your numbers, and it says there's 3.2 million people that are associated with driving, and I think the population in the state of Oregon's right around 3 million, 3.2, so...
3.75.
Yeah. So with the population being there, that means we have quite a few driver's licenses out there that aren't in the state.
Madam Chair, Representative Widener, perhaps. We also, as I pointed out earlier, we do create a record for people who are drivers from other states. Our numbers also include licenses that may have expired for a year. People may have moved, so they're still on record. They haven't licensed in another state. There's a lot of other factors you could look at as far as the numbers there. I couldn't draw that conclusion necessarily.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And there's been several improvements over the process at the DMV over the years that have helped streamline, get people in, get them taken care of accurately and out there a lot quicker, not necessarily just due to the fact that fewer illegal immigrants are applying for something, although what that may certainly, if there's no one doing that, that would reduce the time, but in large part is due to the improvements in the process. Mm-hmm. But that's not what my question is. The e-verification system I read about in here that the DMV uses, is that the same system that businesses use? Like I believe if you are contracted with the federal government, you have to do e-verification to make sure people that are working there legally. Is that the same system?
Madam Chair, Schaffler, I believe it's a similar system, but it's a system that's been set up for state motor vehicle agencies to use. Mm-hmm. It does interact with the Department of Homeland Security's databases. We also, and that's for the immigration documents. I think what you're referring to, though, is more the Social Security number verification.
Well, I just briefly read something in here about that.
Right.
And I just wanted to know if it was the same.
It's not called the E-Verify system.
Right.
On Social Security numbers, we use a separate system for the Social Security Administration that motor vehicle agencies use. It's called SOLVE. whatever that, I'm not sure what that stands for. And then on the immigration documents, it's called the SAVE system, Systematic Alien Verification System.
Madam Chair, briefly.
Yes.
Because we're going to hear, in all likelihood, a bill relating to e-verification for employers here in the state of Oregon in business and labor. And what I would like, if you can get the data for me, is how many folks that are through that system that are doing it that are not qualified, in other words, they don't have the documentation to prove it here, and how many are denied, wrongfully denied, through the system that you have to go back and fix and say, no, they are rightfully applying and we made a mistake. If you have that data, I'd really be interested in looking at it.
Madam Chair, Representative Shoffler, I think we have the data on the Social Security number verification. I think that's the closest comparison to the E-Verify system.
Whatever you got, I'm interested in. Thank you.
And, committee, we are going to have, I think the bill we passed required ODOT to report back to us on the status and information on that. So we'll have that update. One of the things that I don't know whether you would have in there or if it's possible to get, are we seeing any corresponding numbers of unlicensed drivers that the police agencies are reporting?
Madam Chair, there was a companion bill to Senate Bill 1080 in February that requires us to provide reports, annual reports for the next 5 years. The first report that was due in January, last month, we weren't required to provide that type of an impact, more the implementation type of a report. But every annual report after that, we're supposed to provide our best information about the effect on unlicensed and uninsured drivers in the state. Our efforts up to now have been creating a baseline so that we can then measure the effect. Senate Bill 1080 from February took effect in July of last year, so it hasn't had a lot of time yet to create the types of data that you'd like to have, I think, as far as its effect. It's an 8-year driver's license, as was pointed out just a moment ago, so it's going to take some time for the effect to be manifest itself in people being pulled over for and cited for not having a driver's license or being uninsured.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Representative Gilman.
Thank you. Thanks, Madam Chair. Tom, on page 3, it says that you issued 450 suspension revocations, yada, yada. And on page 5, it says 435. I know that's only a difference of 15,000, but which number is correct? Or is it an average of the two?
Yeah. Madam Chair, Representative Gilman, that's that change. That's the difference in from 1 year to the next. We average about 450,000. In fiscal year 2008, there was actually 435,000 that were reported entered in the record. So one's an annual specific year. The 450,000 is more of an average. Traditionally, that's what we end up entering. Sorry for the inconsistency in the figures there.
All right. Seeing no one, you can go ahead.
Starting to identify some of the other services that we provide for other ODOT divisions and other agencies. We issue the motor carrier credentials. We issue truck oversize and weight permits. We sell snow park permits in our offices. We verify, of course, that vehicles have passed emissions tests. We offer voter registration to individuals who are applying for a driver license or an ID card. We offer the option to add a D designation, a donor designation, on a driver's license or an ID card. We don't promote either way, but we ask if a person would like to have that designation placed on their card. It really has nothing to do with issuing a driver's license, but it is a requirement that we provide that option. Any questions about field services?
See any.
Okay. Another group we have is processing services, and this group is more of our back office group and handles the mailed-in transactions. The work that's processed in the field offices gets passed to our headquarters building processing. They handle all that mail-in business on driver licenses, title and registration, any transactions accepted around the state. And there's a list here of the various products and services we provide and enter into and data that's entered into the computer system. Our employees record traffic violations and convictions, other driving record information. We process accident reports and crash reports from law enforcement. We manage the driver improvement program there, and our medically at-risk driver case reviews are done in this group. We're using facial recognition software today. About half of our offices are installed now with that equipment. We're still rolling that out across the state. This group within our headquarters building takes a look at the previous day's issuance of cards or photos that were taken the previous day. The cards haven't been issued yet at that point, and looks at possible matches. A list of photos will come up on the screen, and our staff, we have pairs of two people, will look through that as for possible matches of the same person under a different customer number and name in our system. So that's what this group is doing as part of that process. We issue driver licenses using the previous photo that's on file for those military personnel that are not able to come into our office to obtain another photo, you know, for a replacement card. Others who are temporarily out of the state can also qualify for a card being issued using the previous photo. We issue hardship permits to suspended drivers, and we process refunds for customers in certain situations. This group processed 2.9 million driver and vehicle records during 2008. Like I said, we posted traffic convictions, about 510,000 of those, and 435 suspension, revocations, and cancellations. We also processed 120,000 crash reports. This group helps enforce Oregon's liability insurance requirements. The group verifies that drivers carry vehicle liability insurance. They conduct a random sample check by matching the automobile's insurer's data against our data. So we may have several thousands of potential matches. We go through and randomly pick those that may not have insurance coverage. We'll send them a letter to ask them to verify that they do have insurance coverage. Customer services is the biggest part of this is our phone agents. We have two call centers that answer questions from DMV customers. One is located here in Salem in our headquarters building. The other is at the Oregon Coffee Creek Correctional Facility in Wilsonville. We have inmates that are answering general questions and then scheduling drive tests. We received and handled about 1.7 million phone calls during 2008. So a lot of phone calls. Big, big number there. Customer service group also provides driver and vehicle records when requested by the public or private entities. We administer programs designed to ensure the security of personal information that's held by DMV. Law enforcement accessed our records, 51,000 records last year, and businesses and individuals make more than 4 million DMV record requests each year, and it's our responsibility to ensure that those who request the records are entitled to those records. They qualify for those records according to state and federal laws. This group manages our contract for administrative hearings with the Employment Department and the appeals that people have of our administrative actions. The majority of our hearings involved driver license suspensions under the implied consent laws, driving under the influence. This group also provides our facility management for headquarters and handles our mail service. I'd like to just touch on some of our performance metrics. I've used the word customer a number of times here, and I think you can tell that service to the public is a very big deal to us. So a lot of our performance-type measures or metrics that we have deal with how fast we do things, how quickly we're able to serve people. Quality is important, too, but it's what people seem to measure more than anything else is how quickly they get out of our offices and how quickly we answer their telephone calls and things like that. We also do a customer satisfaction survey. 400 people each month are randomly selected to receive a survey in the mail who've been served in one of our field offices the previous month. Our goal is to have 85% of those people say they had an excellent or at least a good experience with us. And we're typically in the 83 to 85% range of people. It's quite high as far as service goes. I think a lot of private companies would like to have that type of satisfaction, so it's very, very good. In our field offices, like I said, we have 64 around the state. We've calculated that 99% of the Oregon population is within 30 minutes of a DMV field office. They're all over the state. in all sizes of communities. We adjust our staffing levels and business hours to address local needs to the best we can to meet higher volumes of customers, especially in the summer months. There is a cycle. There is a season that we go through. Field offices conducted an average of 9,000 customer transactions per day during 2008 in those offices. We track customer wait times. We have machines in 38 of our 64 offices that calculate what that wait time is from when you walk in the door, take a number, to when you are served at the counter. Our goal is 15 minutes. 2 minutes is pretty fast, but it's been in the 8 to 11 minute range throughout all 2008 on a statewide average. Some offices might get in and out in 2 minutes. We also have our 30- and 35-minute offices as well, as you look around the state. Our goal is, on average, on a statewide basis, to provide 15 minutes. And we've kept it below 15 minutes for the last 3 years in the 11- to 12-minute range. Our call centers, like I say, we have two of those. And we answered 1.7 million phone calls. Our goal there is a 45-second wait time for people. Last year it was above that for the fiscal year, but by the end of calendar year 2008 we hit 45 seconds. So we had a blip, largely because of the governor's executive order and a lot of the changes that took place this last year. We had volume increases really hit us, and people were waiting a longer period of time during that that period. But we've brought it back down to the 45 second range. I've also got online services listed here. We don't have many online services, but we have a few. We do allow people to renew their registration, their vehicle registration, online. You also can change your address with us, and you can also notify us if you've sold a vehicle to somebody else. So you can go online and let us know about that as well. Overall, with all registrations, we're at about 12% of individuals choosing to use the online option. Mostly because it's not as high as it could be because of DEQ areas. People will choose to just renew as soon as they complete the emissions test at a DEQ emissions air quality station. But when you factor those in, overall, completely, all registrations were about 12%. Our goal is just to keep pushing that up higher. That's a very cost-effective way for us to renew registration. And the stickers are mailed to people the next day. So within 2 to 3 days, they're getting there. Your renewal stickers in the mail. We also track our mail turnaround on registration renewals. Our goal there is 5 business days. It fluctuates from about 4.5 to 5.5 days in total, but we're right in there with 5 days. Any questions about our service channels and how we're delivering services?
Not seeing any. So.
Okay. Trying to move this along.
Yes, I just wanted to comment on the time. I don't go in often, but the closest station I have is Astoria. And the 2 times since I've been elected, I've gone in there, it's been like a mini town hall meeting. So my wait time's a lot longer. But no, you do very well. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
Yes, Representative Benz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I see that there's 400 calls a month, or is that how you take the, how are the 400 inquiries regarding customer service made? By call?
By telephone?
By telephone. Is there one full-time person doing that, or how is it handled?
You're talking about the call centers?
No, there's
400.
Surveys.
It
says here, these surveys are page 6. These surveys are conducted monthly by randomly sampling 400 customers who conducted visits in DMV field offices the previous month.
Yes. Madam Chair, Representative Benz, we will mail a survey to the person, and typically we'll follow up if we haven't heard back from them. Response rate is around 35 to 40%. People don't always respond to surveys. But based on that, we're able to extrapolate how well we are doing across the state. And it's been done for many years, every month, so we're able to track, you know, trends as they're happening.
Follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What I was trying to get a handle on is the cost of that technique. What do you think it costs us to do that?
Madam Chair, Representative Benz, we have a contract with Oregon State University. We use students there in their research department. one of their research departments. I would take a guess at about $40,000 a year for that survey. I would have to follow up for sure, but it's in that neighborhood.
Yeah, that would just be one small part of it, I would guess, because someone's got to tabulate it and follow up on it if it has any meaning and put it in computers, and there's got to be a whole apparatus that's been built up around that technique.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm most interested in, because things like that tend to kind of build on themselves and pretty soon, or not. Maybe it's shrunk down so it's just highly efficient now. But there would have to be a follow-up device so that when someone gets 50 complaints in a month, you'd probably have a follow-up methodology that would allow you to go in and confront them and say, gee, there must be something wrong here. So there's a whole bunch of stuff there, and I was just curious,
mm-hmm.
what are we talking? It's got to be more than just the survey cost.
Madam Chair, Representative Benz, there's a little bit of staff time within our office. To compile, collect the data back from Oregon State and put it in some graphs. Probably the most valuable piece of that is the comments that people provide about specific offices. And those are shared with our field office managers and employees every month. They can see the very positive comment we just received from Representative Boone, but also those not so positive ones, gives us something to follow up on. So we have specific comments about particular offices that we can follow up on, and then we've got trends as far as overall how satisfied were you with the service?
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So how would I get the cost? I'm not quibbling about the quality of the program. I'm just curious about the cost.
Madam Chair, Representative Benz, we could do an estimate of what it costs us to provide that, both the direct service of Oregon State and then our behind-the-scenes process. Yeah, we could put an estimate together.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Widener.
Following up with Representative Bentz, is there a way we could get a cost breakdown like of each field office as well to see, you know, are they profitable for the money that's coming in, things like that, you know, so we get a good idea of revenues that they're taking in? And maybe, I know a lot of auto dealers are starting to take on some of the stuff, but maybe where we could combine with a local company like that to provide some of the services to cut overhead. So with some of the slower branches, or where Debbie doesn't have to drive to Astoria and she can do it in Tillamook.
That's even farther.
So,
Madam Chair, Representative Widener, throughout history, we have tried to close DMV field offices with mixed success. Many communities see that as there's an identity associated with having a DMV field office in their community, and it's very, very difficult to close those. We've made business cases for those as far as costing more than what we're taking in. We've done some analysis. It's been a while since we've done that, but with the current economy and the reductions in transactions that we're faced with, we are starting to look at where should our offices be located and what's the most cost-effective way to deliver those services. There are a lot of factors in siting a DMV field office. Parking and space to do motorcycle and commercial driver license testing is one of the big factors. There aren't that many locations in communities that have that type of space for you to do that type of testing and have enough, you know, customer locations. We have done, as I pointed out a minute ago, we've done some privatization as far as the registration plates being issued by the dealerships. In those locations, we don't have to have a field office necessarily for the person to be able to leave the showroom, the dealership, with the plates on their vehicle, and they just send paperwork into us. So that is also one of the kind of privatization efforts that we've done. So we can provide more information about, you know, costs of our offices, but it's sometimes it's a political decision more than it's a business decision, I guess is what I'm trying to suggest to you. Also, in my testimony, I've identified some of the major changes that we've had over the last several years, including some fee increases back in 1999-2001 timeframe. That's the period in time when we went from a four-year card to an eight-year card. It was largely put in place as a cost-saving measure. fewer people coming into our offices. We were looking at significant cuts at that period of time, and that was one of the mechanisms to reduce workload in our offices and not have to make other types of cuts, was to go to an eight-year card. In that time frame, we also, instead of doing in-house administrative hearings, we started using the Employment Department's Office of Administrative Hearings, and eight field offices were closed in that time frame. You'll see here a little bit later, I think, the next biennium, three of those offices were reopened, and Lapine was added, which we didn't have an office before. That happened in 2001-2003. Our fees were increased in that time period, 2001-2003, to help fund highway infrastructure improvements. We began developing the medically at-risk driver program in that time period, which was actually implemented the following year, 2003-2005. The at-risk driver program has both the a mandatory requirement for physicians to notify us when a person has mental or physical, cognitive type problems and concerns about operating a vehicle safely. They are required to notify us of those concerns, and then we will contact the driver and invite them back into a field office for additional testing if it's called for. We also have a voluntary program, which physicians can also submit, but it's law enforcement primarily, DMV employees if they notice a person appears to have some problems, and family and friends.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Berger.
Thank you, Tom. I'd be very interested if you have statistics on how many physicians have availed themselves of this over the time, how many voluntary and how many required reporting on the, on disabilities that would preclude driving.
Okay.
Thank you.
It was 2003-2005 that we started offering the Internet registration renewal transactions, and that was the session that the legislature approved. Actually, it was the next biennium. It was 2005-2007 is when the facial recognition was passed during that session. It gave us 3 years to implement. We're about 3.5 years at this point, but we're getting real close to having it statewide. In 2005-2007, we started seeing the first of several federal government mandates around commercial driver licensing, including hazmat background checks, and the facial recognition technology was in the law was passed at that time. In the current biennium, several things have happened, and I want to just kind of go through those with you. But we're quite proud, I guess, of passing some tests late last year with the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration with our computer systems. We were threatened with loss of significant federal highway funds if we weren't able to meet the tests, and we passed those back in September. Early in the biennium, we started mailing driver licenses and ID cards from a central location. You no longer receive a plastic card when you leave, when you apply for a driver's license or a ID card. What you will receive is basically a receipt. It's a piece of paper that has your photo on it and the information you would need to provide to law enforcement if you were pulled over, which is suited for that purpose only, not for identification. And your card will be mailed to you in about 3 to 5 days. We tell people not to call us until 5 to 7, but typically it's in that 3 to 5 range that you're going to get that in the mail, like a credit card is mailed to you today, in a fairly nondescript envelope, which has caused some problems. It's also maybe avoided some problems. We have people call us to say they never received the card in the mail. They actually, when you ask them, could you check your recycle mail, it's actually sitting there in the mail. They just set it aside. They've tossed it because it isn't quite as, it's not obvious that this is a DMV, your driver license is enclosed type of an envelope. It's less descript than that. So that took effect in the summer of 2007. And one of the advantages of doing that is it allows us to do the overnight comparison of photos for facial recognition. That photo we take today of a person who comes into our office for an original, a renewal or replacement, we will run that photo against our entire database of photos in our system. It's about 10 million photos. And then we do the comparison the next day. So once we've cleared that transaction to go forward, it's sent to a factory. The factory produces the card and it's mailed to the applicant. In February of last year, we began electronically verifying Social Security numbers of all applicants for driver licenses and ID cards. Prior to that, it was only the commercial drivers that were subject to that check. This came from an executive order from the governor that was issued in November of 2007. Purpose there was to bring our standards in closer alignment with neighboring states and other states around the country. The main incentive was for to remove the incentive for people to falsely claim that they lived in Oregon because they didn't qualify in their home state. We had law enforcement notifying us that people were being bused and plane tickets were being purchased from other states to send people to Oregon to get a driver's license because they had a document that wouldn't be accepted in another state, and it was easier to falsify an address document than to try to get past the authorities in the other state. Address documents are actually the easiest to produce fraudulently because to prove that you receive mail in a document in the mail is fairly easy. There aren't security features on a bank statement or a rental agreement or something like that. So that's really the weakness in the system is the address documents. So by tightening up the requirements to get the driver's license, it actually forced people to go to other states, and there aren't many left that don't require the more stringent identity steps that we put people through. So it worked pretty well. What you see from this chart is our reports of suspected fraud in our field offices. We started tracking it probably a little before September of 2007, but you can see the increase gradually each month. We went from 21 in September, 28 in October, 38 in November, 54 in January of 2008. The executive order took effect February 4th of 2008. We only had 6 reported that for that month statewide. And then you can see 1, 2, 3, 4. It really has dropped off substantially and stayed at this level since then. So one indicator, I guess, that something worked with that change in the executive order.
Yes, Representative Widener.
Did you notice a huge budget hit when that executive order took place as far as the issue of driver's license, things like that, and your general budget at your field offices?
Madam Chair, Representative Widener, are you referring to our cost of implementation?
Not the cost of implementation, just with the fall off of people coming in getting the fake IDs and things.
Yes, we've seen a reduction in total transactions that we process across the state. And what if we're getting at savings that we might be achieving, we are holding positions vacant. We're shifting positions where the workload is. We're making those natural adjustments you would make when workloads decline. Also keeping an eye on our wait time, on our turnaround times in those offices.
Do you have an idea of the dollar amount?
I really don't.
Okay.
I really don't. Any questions?
Well, Tom, looking at your chart that started in September, is that about the number you would normally see? I'm guessing that as we were talking about doing this, and the governor was talking about doing this, that people were ramping up to get their licenses or get something done sooner. So is this is an unusual trend for your office, I'm assuming, or not?
Madam Chair, we started contacting law enforcement, I believe, in February or March of 2007. So we don't have much data preceding the September chart, okay? So we were seeing a growth.
Okay.
We did see a spike in ID card requests in the December-January timeframe, just before the governor's executive order took effect. So a lot more people coming in to get an ID card because they didn't have time to get a driver's license. They couldn't get a drive test scheduled in our field offices before the February 4th deadline, so there were a lot more people applying for an ID card instead. So we did see a kind of a spike in that transaction level. I don't know if that can be tied directly back to these suspected fraud cases.
Thank you. Any other questions? Go ahead.
Okay. In July, we did implement the first phase of Senate Bill 1080 from the February legislative session. This bill added more requirements. Proof of U.S. citizenship and lawful presence now is in statute. It was just through the executive order to tighten identity documents that we accept. Proof of full legal name is now in statute, and a documented proof of Social Security number is in statute. Prior to this point, we were accepting a Social Security number verbally from individuals and then checking that Social Security number and name electronically. Now you must provide a document that has the Social Security number on it. In September of last year, responding to a number of customer problems that we were seeing with meeting the full legal name requirement, is that tracing of a document history for individuals was part of our requirements. We went back and looked and decided, and working with our Transportation Commission, that it was reasonable to assume that if a person had a document with their current name and something on that document could tie back to an original kind of source document, a birth certificate, that you wouldn't need every marriage certificate and divorce decree the person went through. But that was the way we initially implemented the bill. And you probably heard from some constituents during that time frame because of that requirement to get at a full legal name. But we backed down from that to a requirement today that if you have a document that has your current full legal name and you also have the birth certificate or passport with a name, give us enough information to show that you are that person, that connection. And if you've been married and divorced 5 times, we really don't care as long as you can show it. Today's name, you are who you say you are, to make that connection. So that was a significant change that we made in September of last year. And we estimate over 92% of the cases, the issues that we were dealing with, kind of went away just with that change in rules in implementing the bill. In October, we started installing the facial recognition systems across the state. We got about 38 of our offices 38 of our offices installed. We're having some problems with the equipment, so we stopped at that point. We are still able to, in those offices, do the one-to-one and one-to-many check for the photos, and we expect over the next 2 to 3 months to finish the rollout statewide so that all of our offices are using that technology. Late December, we finished our preparations for verifying the immigration documents with the Department of Homeland Security. That took effect January 1st. And so now in all of our offices, when a person provides an immigration document, we are verifying that alien registration number from the document to make sure that there is a record with Homeland Security that the person was issued that card. And there's a couple levels of checks if it doesn't come back as a positive initially, but we have implemented that as required. Work in progress right now, this biennium. We're preparing to issue limited-term driver licenses and identification cards for individuals who have a limited stay in this country. These cards expire when immigration papers are no longer valid, and it will be implemented by January 2010 as required by the bill. Also, as I said, installation of the facial recognition system is ongoing, and we should have that done later this spring. And we continue, it seems like we're always doing this, but continue to work on meeting federal mandates for the commercial driver licensing program and system changes that always have to be made to continue to comply. I've got a number of challenges that we're faced with, demographic challenges and things like that. I don't know if I need to go into this for you, but just suffice to say, as Oregon changes, we have to respond as well. As it's an older population, our responses need to change. As it becomes a more diverse population, we need to be able to handle the language issues that come up along the way. As fraud is continuing to be an issue, as the driver license becomes the identity document of choice in this country, we have to take fraud very, very seriously as well. So we do have a unit now that's focused on investigating alleged fraud situations, cases. Driving without privileges, I identified that here. We increasingly believe people are choosing to drive without valid driving privileges, whether they are suspended, revoked, never licensed in the state. That is a problem. We take administrative action to remove driving privileges, but then somebody has to take the keys away or take the car away or something to keep the person from driving. So that is increasingly an issue, and I'm sure you'll have bills to consider relating to that, that particular issue. We have an aging infrastructure, and for us, that's two things. One is our systems are very, very old, and we are making improvements gradually, but there will be a day when we have to replace very old systems. And our field offices are largely leased from the private sector, and we're constantly looking at weatherization and improvements and repairs to those facilities. So, in summary, DMV is both a service and a regulatory organization. As you can hear from the programs as I described them, we have both a service component and we also have regulatory responsibilities. We touch most Oregonians' lives. Customer satisfaction and continuous improvement are keys to our mission to promote driver safety, protect financial and ownership interests, and to collect revenues for Oregon's roads. With that, I'd welcome any further questions you might have.
All right. Any questions?
Madam Chair, not a question so much as a comment. Tom knows that last year I was part of a work group to deal with the suspended license issue. And the fact that we really don't have a good answer for folks who continually drive. We take their license away and they continue to drive, and then they get stopped again and they continue to drive. Tom would welcome any further stats you've got on this, because it's an ongoing issue and one that I wish we could find. And if you've not heard of zebra plates, ask, because the zebra plate, you want to talk about the zebra plate issue? I think it's coming out of the Senate. I hope to see it at some point. It's a plate that would indicate that you are until you get your license, they can slap a zebra stripe on your driver's, on your car, basically, on your plate, and then everybody driving around knows you're driving suspended.
Madam Chair, do you want me to provide some additional details? Back in the late 80s, the Legislative Assembly passed a law that indicated that if a driver was stopped and was driving without a valid license, that they would be issued by a police officer a small sticker, reflective silver and white sticker that would go over the top of their registration sticker on their license plate. And that sticker provided police officers with automatic probable cause. They could stop them for any reason. If they saw them on the road, they could stop them. And the probable cause was, you have a zebra sticker, so we're stopping you to see if it's actually a suspended driver driving that car. That's, sometimes they would stop a different driver driving the car, maybe the person's wife, girlfriend, brother, mother driving the car, and then they would let them go. But it was an automatic, allowed an officer to stop that car to see if it was indeed a suspended driver driving that car. And I think they ceased that program in 93.
Yes, Madam Chair, and in this work group, we talked about people who have up to 20 suspension violations who are driving the same highways that you and I are, and that's unconscionable. They're getting away with it.
Yes.
Madam Chair, I also point out that there's a difference between people being suspended for driving-related purposes and non-driving-related purposes. And I would encourage you to consider that as you're looking at this particular, the problem in the possible solution, because there are people with suspended licenses because they couldn't pay a fine or didn't show up in court. And so they're suspended, they'll continue to drive, they'll get another suspension. That's different, I would suggest, than someone who has habitually had problems driving safely on our roads and have had suspensions. Just a consideration. And we do have some data on that. We've also done some surveys of other states and some studies on this particular problem. Nobody has a solution, a definite solution to this particular problem. There's vehicle forfeiture and confiscation, and there's a lot of different techniques out there, many of which are in Oregon law today if we had the resources and the maybe wherewithal to use them. So I just add that.
Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Tom, part of the impetus behind Senate Bill 1080 was the Federal Real ID Act. Could you outline for us quickly the major outstanding issues and associated costs associated with full compliance?
Madam Chair, Representative Edwards, that may be a topic you want to take on as a separate agenda item perhaps for another day. I can touch kind of high level what's included there. The governor's budget does include a request for positions and funding for implementation of the Real ID Act. But I'd like to have an opportunity to really delve into that more fully with you if I could. In a nutshell, the federal government passed a bill called the Real ID Act, and the president signed it in May of 2005, giving states 3 years to meet certain standards. That was ultimately extended. The time frames were extended through regulations by the Department of Homeland Security, which were approved a year ago. January of 2008 is when those regulations came out. And Oregon requested and received an extension for compliance. There are two time frames for compliance. The first deals, they call it material compliance. And that deadline is coming up at the end of this calendar year, the end of December 2009. States have a list of 18 things. There's a checklist that we need to go through, and I'd like to share that with you at some point of what exactly do you have to have in place. The legal presence requirement in a state for eligibility is one of those requirements you must have in place. Verifying Social Security numbers, you must have in place. We have that. Verifying the immigration documents, we're doing that. I'd like to go through each of those and show you what we've accomplished, what we've done so far in the works, and what still needs to be done to achieve compliance. The second phase, if a state gets past that part and is given more time, you have until May 11th of 2011 for another set of requirements. And I could also give you that list as well. Some of those things we would need to get started on right away if we were to achieve compliance. That's why we have a budget request.
Follow-up?
Yes, follow-up. Just for your future presentation, I'd appreciate if you could also include the associated unfunded costs to the state of Oregon for complying with the federal mandate.
Representative Widener.
Just a heads up, I think there's a memorial going around asking the federal government to finish funding the Real ID Act right now that we should look at, and if we had the real cost, we could just include that when it goes off, if it makes it through a committee, which I don't see why it wouldn't. I don't know. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, I have. I have seen the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I'd imagine there's a long list of reasons why someone could be denied driving privileges or have one of these zebra stickers applied to their plate. But I'd imagine the average response of the average person who does pay for their registration, title, fees, plates, and does follow the rules of the road would be, so what? Patrick or someone, Madam Chair, was this law found unconstitutional, or we just quit doing it? And I think it's a good idea.
Madam Chair, Representative Schaffler, if my memory serves, the Zebra Plate program had a sunset, and the sunset passed on it. I think I can provide, if the committee would like, some studies that I have in my files about the state police and other law enforcement, I think, was not committal in terms of how much value the program had, how effective it was, whether it actually resulted in reduced recidivism rates. I don't think recidivism is the right word there. Repeat offender rates, I think, is the...
Thank you.
Representative Burton.
I have to comment here that we heard from Troy Costales, who you know who we are, that the study, the follow-up study, wasn't done until well after it had sunsetted, but the follow-up study was quite, shall we say, positive about the impact of the program. But it had sunsetted, and there are all these other issues out there on it, but I guess I'm a little discouraged about the fact that we, like other states, can't get at this program and by any of the means that we've tried so far, can't get at this issue of people just who aren't following the rules for whatever reason, they can't afford it or whatever. I have to tell you, because it's timely, that I read an email from a constituent of mine yesterday who was complaining about his suspension, and he described it that he somehow managed to attract four tickets. And I love that use of terms. And I fired back, you didn't attract them, you earned them, and my staff told me don't sit, send. But that's, you know, sort of, it's representative of a certain attitude that it's not my fault, and somehow we have to get at that. So enough of my speech.
I think you just sent it, Vicki.
And we have had, over the number of years I've been on this committee, we've had this discussion a lot, and it's really a very difficult issue to get at. I mean, you can put a zebra sticker on a plate, but who's to say that's the car that guy's going to go out and drive? They'll go out and buy a cheap little car and drive it until they get it get forfeiture on it, and then go out and get another cheap car. So it isn't quite that easy to get at. We had a very interesting testimony, I want to say last session, from a police officer who came and testified, who said that he pulled over a car and the driver was, you know, suspended, repeat offenses, and he said, go ahead, ticket me, I don't care. I'm going to just turn around and drive again anyway, and he says, I'm not going to ticket you, I'm going to ticket your girlfriend because it's her car and she let you drive it. And that made him mad. So, I mean, it is an interesting problem. And, I wish somebody could get our hand on it.
The same as the DUI. You know, there are some
ankle
people
bracelets.
Who don't care.
With that, thank you.
For the record.
And if the committee would like, we could have an informational hearing on this, or we could wait and see if the bill comes.
I believe there's a bill. I'll check and let you know, Madam Chair.
Okay. And then I'm going to go ahead and say thank you for coming, and be very productive in your next 45 minutes.
Thank you for that.